Federated just wants to say thanks to all local businesses in and around the state of Minnesota. You are our community partners, our neighbors, our families, and our friends. And when you need Federated, Federated is here to help. Visit federatedinsurance.com or call your local marketing representative to access trusted resources you may need during this pandemic. At Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
So it is Zolgad as usual, Declan Goff producing, and my buddy, my usual conduit to trouble buddy, Chip Scoggins, actually joins us today for the big show itself. And Chip, I was hoping that you would join us today to talk about a very competitive, compelling, possibly a win, possibly a loss, but a really fun to break down Gopher Michigan football game. Instead, you joined me today so we can commiserate about a Gopher football game that looked like so many previous Michigan Gopher games. And sadly to me, you know, the storylines are so familiar as well. Starting with the fact that the defense couldn't have stopped the three of us on this show right now. I mean, just what, how shocked were you? Not by the loss, because the loss didn't shock you. How shocked were you as we watched that unfold? Just what we saw.
I've seen that defense before, Judd. I've covered that defense before many times. Yeah. You know, I wasn't shocked, and I don't know if I was surprised. We knew, the defense was going to have some growing pains. I didn't think it'd be that bad, but, when, you know, how often have we said that the Gophers lose four defensive players to the NFL? You know, that just doesn't happen too often, but you know, and it's not to make excuses, but you know, you lose seven starters, including four NFL players, and Antoine Winfield Jr. is one of the best players in that program's had decades. And so I thought there'd be some growing pains. I didn't think they would look that bad. They looked, I don't know how many plays, they just looked like they were completely out of position. And the one was, you know, probably the poster child for it, the 70-yard touchdown run where the guy just goes up the middle untouched, and you have three guys that either take bad angles or just out of had bad run fits, just not in the right place. So I thought this team would have to win a lot of shootouts until the defense kind of got up to speed. Yeah, but they have a lot of work to do on that. And it's not, and you know, we can talk about the youth and that they're playing a lot of freshman linebackers, but there's some veterans on that defense. I mean, there's some older guys that are on the line. They haven't played a lot, but they're older guys that have been in college a lot. Defensive, the secondary has some established players. I think that's their strength. And those guys didn't play well. And so, yeah, I mean, you have to give credit to Michigan too. That's a remade offense. They have four new offensive linemen, a new quarterback. They lost their best wide receiver, but the difference in athletes, I think we saw, showed up on both sides of the ball.
Can you explain to me, especially in football in this town, and it's happened to the Vikings, it happened to the Gophers when they played Wisconsin in the last regular season game at TCF Bank Stadium last year. It happened on Saturday. What is the need for the local teams to get off to really optimistic starts? And so we all get lulled into thinking, oh, look at this. They score. Oh, you know, block punt. This is fantastic. Look at that. You know, I think it was a deep touchdown to Bateman, right, against the Badgers last year. Oh, my God. Look, they might beat Wisconsin. And the Vikings, NFC title game, 2017. They get their drawers blown off. But what was the first thing? Touchdown to Rudolph. What is the need to tease us? If you're going to stink, just go ahead and stink all night. Don't give us this tease.
You'd rather just return the opening kickoff 100 yards, right?
I mean, I just I feel so stupid because I'm like, oh, man, okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm in. Well, I'm in on this game.
Well, that's what it is. I tweeted. It's like, this is the start Fleck wanted. Block, punt, touchdown. Oh, well, so much for that theory. Yeah, I mean, it was – you know, it was a – not only did you have the defense, you have all the weird going-ons with the kickers, with the COVID. And, you know, the offense was not good. They weren't terrible by any stretch. They did some nice things. I mean, the running back's really good. Bateman's obviously good. I thought, you know, they lost the right side of their offensive line to injuries with Dunlap and Fale. That's obviously going to have an impact when you lose two starting line off the same side. And I think Michigan took advantage of that with some blitzes, and they had some protection issues, but the offense wasn't the primary problem by any stretch. You know, I think Tanner Morgan's going to have to trust other receivers besides Bateman. Obviously, you want to try to force feed him the ball, but if teams are doubling him, they got to have a section. And I think Ottman Bell, he had one really nice catch, and I think he's a good receiver. And so I think that'll happen over time. Like I said, the running back is really good. He that guy runs with his heart every game. I've never seen him give anything but maximum effort. So, but you know, the defense is just it's got to be, you know, miles better than what it was. Now, Judd, you're not going to play Michigan every week. You know,
you're
getting Maryland. You're getting some bad teams here in a row. Maryland, Illinois, next up, and so it's a chance to. That much firepower, but you can't just assume because you're not playing Michigan that everything's going. They've got to be a lot better.
So 481 yards against them by Michigan on Saturday. So I thought about your point too, Chip, because look, there's going to be some teams that are you know, very competitive and very good. And then to your point, there's going to be the Terrapins and there's going to be Illinois. I get all that. Here's my concern about what I saw, back to your point, though, about like the run fits and missed tackles. That there were plays in the Michigan game on Saturday that reminded me very much of, I think it was the last game that Rob Smith was the DC for against Illinois in 2018, and he got fired the next day. And just watching Michigan, that long touchdown run, that very much seemed to be the same thing, because you're right. That's not some great run. That's just missed assignments and misplays. And what was that defense known for by the time Rob Smith got fired? Exactly that.
Being out of position. Yeah.
And Robbie changed all that to his credit. Well,
yeah. And you look at that Illinois game that day was one, maybe the worst defensive performance I've seen from a Gophers team. I mean, they had so many busted long runs. I mean, there was probably four touchdowns that were over 50 yards. And on the one Saturday night, the 70 yarder, you know, the defensive end, who's a first time starter, crashed down. The freshman linebacker, you know, got in the wrong run fit. And then I think a safety took a bad angle. And so I know the coaches are going to say, what do we always hear? This is correctable, because it's alignment and assignment, right? I mean, it's things that just be in the right spot. I do think the tackling, I think you'll get better. I think that's a product of probably not have a normal training camp.
Sure.
I say tackle anyways, you know, it's not like the old days where they're tackling every day, but there might even been a lot less than that. We were allowed to watch practice. So I think watching college football all over, you know, just nationally and watching a lot of games, tackling is a problem. And let's be honest, defense in college football is almost non-existent now anyways. Even Nick Saban said it last week, right? He said, you can't win with defense in college football anymore. Like you're not going to hold teams down to 10 points. It's just not going to happen. You've got to outscore them to some degree. So, but yeah, just being out of position, you know, on some of those plays and just looking kind of confused and chaotic at times on defense.
Yes.
I think that was probably the biggest eye opener to me.
And again, if you lose, if the score on the screen is 30-24, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's tough. It's how you lost, and it's the fact that both teams were playing their first game. So I'm with you. There's some of this that can certainly be explained and corrected, and just watch the film, as Les and Christian like to say, and all that. But it's how it happened in two teams playing their first games, and the scary thing is, it's not like it was a veteran Michigan offense that came in and did you in. Like if that had been Ohio State or something, I'd still be disappointed, but the circumstances don't dictate that. If the Michigan kicker had not missed three field goals, we're talking probably like right now about a 55-24 loss.
Yeah, and that's that game on paper, it looked like strength versus strength, unknown versus unknown, because Michigan's is good. I mean, they got really good players over there, and Don Brown's a great defense coordinator, and obviously the Gophers offense is their strength. So I thought those two might cancel each other out. And then it was just the unknown of Michigan's new offense versus the Gophers new defense. And hey, Michigan lost four offensive linemen to the NFL draft. So they had four linemen drafted. Their number one receiver, Nico Collins, who was, you know, one of the best returning Big Ten wide receivers, he opted out. The quarterback, I know he has a lot of hype, and he was a phenom in high school, and he looks the part. He is gigantic at 6'5", 245 pounds, Joe Milton. But that was his first start too. And so I know it's Michigan, and I know they recruit well, so it's a little more plug and play than the Gophers are. right? That you kind of reload. Yeah. But it's still a first time out. You don't know what, you know, those guys are going to get. And they did not look like the first time out group.
And you're good too, Chip. Like, that's the thing. If we're going to change our expectations and feeling about the Gophers, then
let's change them. Yeah.
They have to be changed. It can't be like, well, Michigan's Michigan. So, I mean, come on now. And no, if you're good. Did PJ Fleck in his post game Zoom? I love the post game Zoom.
Yeah.
So it's so personal. It's just crazy.
I hate it.
I'm 1000% with you. Did PJ Fleck in that post game Zoom seem, for lack of a better word, shook to you? He seemed sort of just for his ordinary demeanor. So him ordinarily against what we saw on Saturday.
Well, I think they had to be probably surprised by, because I asked PJ about his defense last week in the Zoom before the game about his defense and just the uncertainty of what you're going to see. And he said, yeah, you never know until the lights come on and they play a real game. I'm sure it probably, you know, I don't know if it's disappointed or shocked him about how bad they played and how just out of position sometimes they were. The other thing is, obviously, he took some, and I don't know if he saw this before he came in. He said, you know, some people are going to be mad at the decision to go for the fake punt on fourth and four there at the 31 late in the first half. He said, they don't know what I know in terms of their kicking situation. And I think he felt almost like he had his hand tied behind his back because of his punting situation. He didn't trust the punter. He said, we already had one 14-yard punt. I still think in that situation, that was too much of a gamble because you're still in the game. And if you don't get it, you're basically conceding points and the game's over, I think. If they score a touchdown there, which they did, if you don't get it, it's 35 to, was it 17 or 14? And I just felt like it's too much of a risk at that point.
Yeah.
But I think he was probably a little bit exasperated by the kicking situation, which I read this for DeMar Judd is like, hey, man, we all wanted them to give this a shot. We wanted Big Ten football. Well, the first week of the season showed us it's going to be chaotic and imperfect. And, you know, you had the Purdue coach miss. The Gophers kicking situation was a disaster. The Wisconsin might be without their stud quarterback now. He tested positive, and we'll see if it was a false positive. I assume it'll be today. This is going to be chaotic. And I think media, fans, coaches are all going to have to understand. Judd, you want to put an asterisk by the season. I'm not sure that's not the wrong idea, but it's going to be from week to week. They're going to have to deal with things that they've never had to deal with.
Yeah, and I'll say this. In Fleck's case, and I know that in the college game, there's no compelling case made to a coach to be truthful until the game is actually played. I understand why you don't release some of the information to opposing teams. But, you know, when you don't have your specialists across the board, you are pretty much screwed. And you could have told us that on Wednesday and told Michigan that. You could have told us that on Saturday. The point is, here's a question. A question for both of you guys regarding this. And this is off the top of my head, okay? So I might be completely wrong here. If you're going to attempt in 2020 a fake punt, does it make more sense to leave your offense on the field and go for it? Because I don't know that fake punts, like, I get that they can work sometimes, but you're asking a lot of kids who don't know exactly what they're doing. I would almost prefer to have the competency of my offense attempt it than, hey, let's get it to the up back and see what happens.
And this is totally in hindsight talking, Judd. I would rather trust throwing a slant to Bateman than I would putting the ball in Kokeef's hand and trying to get 4 yards. Now, you remove the element of surprise, and sometimes it catches them off guard. But it was fourth and four. You're not having a dynamic playmaker catch the ball there or take the direct snap. They can double Bateman or whatever, but I think if you just feel like, okay, punting's not an issue, so it's either going to be go for it or punting's not going to be one of the scenarios. It's either going to be go for it or fake it. And this is total hindsight. I'd probably line up and try to go for it, but we would think we would say he's crazy then too. Like if it doesn't work, we're like, what in the world are you doing? Just punt it or fake punt, you know? So, but I would probably rather try to get the ball to Bateman than put it in the lesser, you know, player's hands.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to get too cute. And I love when a fake punt is called. It's one of the more exciting plays in football. I don't know why. But when you're basically all your specialists are out, what Kleck said, they were down their first and second string kickers. And
well, yeah, his first and third kickers, the back kicker, but the backup kicker was hurt, which we didn't.
So
they're down to a second punter. Yeah.
Right. So you were already kind of behind the eight ball. I think you can get cute with the fake punt if you're in a little bit better field position too, but I would have just rather trusted the offense that, look, Tanner Morgan and Rashad Bateman are good guys. And look, Mo Abraham ran all over the place on Saturday as well. So I would have been more comfortable keeping your offense out instead of going for the fake punt. There's a right time to call it, but I agree. I don't think it was the right time to go with a fake punt in that situation.
And Judge, you bring up a good point about coaches tipping their hand and no coach is going to give you their depth. But it is interesting, and it's a dilemma because, you know, Walker was their backup kicker, and normally Grant Ryerson is their kickoff specialist. He handled it all last year. Well, he was on the sideline, in pads. He didn't have his helmet on, but he was dressed. Mm-hmm. So you're assuming he had COVID. He could be injured. You don't know. They're not releasing that.
Right.
But by not saying, and they're not going to tell, hey, Michigan, we're going to have to squib kick it or pop it up every time because our guy is just coming off. They're not going to do that. But they also, you know, it became a punchline on Twitter and social media with people making fun of this kid. It's like, I took part in too. It's like, is this the farthest he can kick it? I mean, they don't have somebody that can kick the ball deep. It has to be a pop up or a squib. Now, yep. I came after the game, and you know, PJ said they were without two kickers, and the third guy was coming off sports hernia, so they had to protect him. That's all he could do. So it's a tough situation. I mean, you hate the kid was getting embarrassed on national TV and people making fun of him on social media because
it's not the kid's fault.
It wasn't the kid's fault. He was hurt.
I don't blame the kid.
Semi hurt or whatever. How you want to describe. But I also understand why PJ is not going to say, hey, Jim Harbaugh, we're going to have to pop these up every time and we're going to squib kick it because the guy can't. They're not going to do that, you know.
So are guys who don't play, they're possibly COVID cases, they're possibly exposed, they're possibly hurt. Do we know for sure that some of the kids who aren't playing have not also opted out?
Well, Dunlap for sure, the right guard, we saw him on one of those scooters with your leg up.
So he's hurt.
And I think for LA, he's hurt too. Oliver, the linebacker, I believe is coming off surgery. I think the only COVID cases were the specialists. And it's weird because, PJ said, he wouldn't say they're COVID cases, but you can imagine what it was. So, I mean, basically he was saying it, but
yeah,
he said it happened at different times. Now the Big Ten rule is after you have that, once they know if you take the point of care, then you take a PCR just to confirm it's not a false positive. So if it's not a false positive, it's 21 days. But when did it start for those kickers? And the fact that Grant Ryerson was on the sideline tells me he's past that contagious stage, right? So he must be 14 days beyond it. The fact that he wasn't in isolation.
Right.
The punter was out there, the starting punter, the kid that transferred in, he was out there. So I would think that he's past the quarantine stage.
Yeah. Fleck, I think on the Zoom, after the loss, Chip, I think what he was trying to say was, without coming out and saying it, was every one of those guys was at a different point of the aftercare. Yes. And yes. So, but he was trying to be, I don't know if he was trying to be sort of cute or tell you as much as he felt comfortable telling you. I couldn't tell, but it very much to me painted a picture of, hey, this guy might still be out 21 days, but this guy might only have 7 days left or something like that. That's how I took that.
Well, and that's what he was saying is like they hit him at different times. And I you know, coaches are going to say the HIPAA thing. I don't buy that the HIPAA, this is a violation of HIPAA, but I think that they're want to go through and say, okay, this guy got it on this date. So he has, this guy, they're not going to go through the depth chart and tell you where each guy's at. I mean, it's just not going to happen. But I don't know. Are two of them coming back this week against Maryland? Is one back? But I have to think, Judd, though, if they were on the sideline around the teammates, they got to be close, right? They're not going to be. That means they're out of isolation, out of quarantine.
Correct.
So maybe it's just one more game, but I would doubt that it's going to be two more games.
Correct. And
yes, that's just a guess.
And problem four is, and we don't know this for sure, if you violate a team rule and are now suspended for a game, they're not going to tell you that.
Well, no, that and that's,
so like that could eventually play a role as well. If a kid, you know, is in street clothes, does not play, it could have nothing to do with being hurt, COVID, or sickness at all.
Yeah, it could be the guy was not going to class, not doing his schoolwork.
It could be too. In 2020, boys, that you get caught in a bar.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way that every player in you know across the board in college that none of them are going to go to bars, take their mask off. And the problem now is someone's going to see them, take a picture. If the coach sees that, that probably leads, sick or not, immediately to disciplinary action, because you can't have that.
Well, it would be interesting. And I know they're college kids, but in today's day with cell phone videos and cell phone pictures and Instagram, I would have to think that's an automatic suspension from a game. Because you're going to have to go in isolation. Well, you're getting tested every day anyway, so they're going to know whether you test positive. But heaven forbid that one does, you know, somebody does go to a bar and then test positive. I would think that they're going to be punished by not playing for three games, you know?
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, it's from a media's perspective, Judd, it's hard because you don't want to assume anything, but you also have to tell people, hey, this person's not playing. Now, we don't know if it's COVID. We don't know if it's hurt. We don't know if he's being punished for something. And I think you just have to leave it at that. And you know, you'll find out if it's one game or three games.
Is this worth it?
It's funny. That's my call tomorrow. It's still worth it. You still have to give it a chance. You know, I understand the health and safety part of it and just the disruption and all the things we're talking about coaches not being there and all these things. I still think it's worth it. I still think you have to give it a shot.
Here's why I'm torn. Here's why I'm very torn. If college athletics were treated like the academics want to believe, then it's not. Then it's dumb to play. Personally, I'm with you 1,000%. I want football. Yeah. I want to watch it. If you don't understand that this is a business, you've got your head buried in the sand so deep I can't see it. So I think if college sports was treated like the colleges try and sell it, then I think it's hypocritical to play and probably dumb. But from my own perspective of, you know, sitting down on a Saturday and watching games, I absolutely want to see games. Yes.
Jed, don't you think colleges are also hypocritical in the way that if they try to sell this as amateur sports? I mean, do you think people still believe that notion that, hey, this is great, this is mom and pop, and this is amateur, and they're student, they're not student athletes. No. They're, you know,
no.
I mean,
no.
They're athletes who go to school. You know, I mean, this is business. There's a lot of money being made. College sports are rich because of these athletes. And so for them to say, you know, pretend this is 1980, that's disingenuous. And so I don't know that many people, I think most people understand what this is about. They understand that schools need this money. I mean, football keeps athletic departments afloat. They absolutely, we're seeing sports get cut. Yep. We're seeing all these different things. Talking about being $75 million in the hole in revenue, they need football. And I think most people, you're pretty gullible if you don't know what this is about.
If ESPN and ABC and CBS and Fox came around tomorrow and said, we have serious concerns about these children, we don't think that they should be playing, and in fact, we are going to yank all of these games off our airwaves, our conscience tells us that we can no longer televise for the rest of 2020 college football. They would stop playing tomorrow. Like that's, but again, I'm a hypocrite. I want them to play. I understand that from the fundamental position of, if we really care about our children, this is probably not smart, but I'm not going to sit here and say, don't play. Cause we saw that, Chip, for what?
Yeah.
3 months, 4 months.
Well, 3 months. Yeah.
We saw that. It's not good for us either.
And Jed, I do, you know, we know that there are always outliers. Cases where young people have gotten sick, but by and large, the vast majority, vast high percentage of them either have little symptoms, no symptoms, or get over it pretty quickly. And so, and that's not to diminish the deaths that we see in the country, and that's not to minimize COVID or just ignore it. You have to be safe. I feel like they're taking the safe precautions. I was on board when they started testing every day.
Yeah.
And then part of the reason, Judd, that this is 3 weeks when a person tests positive, I think most conferences are 2 weeks, which is probably the standard, 14 days, right? Huh? The Big Ten added in another week for the cardiac care and the cardiac monitoring. So that third week, you're going through all kinds of, you know, heart exams and EKGs to make sure. That was the myocarditis was the big reason why they pushed pause the first time. And so they built in another week, and people are probably frustrated by that, but hey, this is part of the deal. If you want football, this is how it's going to look. You know, you're going to have that third week of looking at your heart to make sure there's no issues there.
Do you think, Chip, that we are going to see some type of lawsuit or action filed from what you're talking about? Not from the sickness, but from the fact that they are doing so many things to play college football that I don't think the administrators and hierarchy has ever gone this far as basically acknowledging that it's a pro sport. Do you think that someone's going to look at this and say, if you're going to test daily, which by the way is smart, but it's expensive, mm-hmm. and that's what pro sports do. Do you think that somebody's going to come down the pike and say, everything that you did in 2020 basically acknowledges that these kids are professionals?
Yes. Judd, we live in a lawsuit society. People sue over everything. So somebody's going to sue. Somebody's going to get sick and they're going to sue, or somebody's going to develop.
Or not sick. I'm just saying what they're doing is acknowledging that this is a pro sport.
Yes. The protocols are what you would expect from and what you're seeing from NFL, Major League Baseball. So I'm sure somewhere there's a lawyer somewhere that's going to talk somebody into saying, hey, they shouldn't have been doing this. We should sue. So it won't surprise me. Now, whether it holds up in court, that's for smarter people than me. But we see lawsuits over everything. So it would not surprise me if we see one over this too.
All right, Chip Scoggins, National Football League trade deadline is a week from Tuesday, Election Day.
Sell.
Yes. 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 There is already Yannick Ngakoue is gone. Realistically, by the deadline, which is probably 3 p.m. Central, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. our time on November the 3rd, that Tuesday, how many veteran Vikings do you expect to be gone here? And keeping in mind, too, here's the one problem. There's a lot of terrible teams that are going to look to dump. So this is definitely going to be a buyer's market. But what do you think as far as names go? Who's going to be gone?
Well, you have to go through the list and see realistically, contract wise, production wise, just where they are in a career. How many guys have like the kind of value that someone's going to give up a draft you would want, right?
Yeah.
I would say Anthony Harris, probably because where he's at in his contract.
Yep.
Riley Reiff. Somebody want an extra offensive lineman that if somebody suffers an injury, you know, or has an injury.
Would you take a fifth round pick for him?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I think you get a fifth round pick.
Kyle Rudolph, maybe. Yep. Somebody want an extra tight end? You know, Thielen, I would not trade. I mean, because you got to have some players, right? I mean,
what if Thielen gets you what you want? That's my thing. Is I wouldn't rule him out.
But who's your? You got to have a team. Like you got to have a team the rest of the year.
What if I decide that Cousins is a lost cause and I might be stuck there? So it's going to be a couple years of bad football. Like if I think I'm really stuck with Cousins, I don't know that I do want a team. I might want to come out of the Kirk years prepared to hit the ground running and allow Kirk to feel the full wrath of his salary cap hit. Like the fans in this town have.
I would love to see you as a GM.
I think there's different or a coach, because I would have benched his butt at halftime and made him those stats that he got against the Falcons, who, by the way, found a way to lose to the Lions.
Okay, fans, we're not going to have a game this week. COVID hit our. No, we're just.
Forfeiting. We traded
two guys. We have no more players. We got a lot of. I have 300 draft picks, but we have no.
And you know what we're going to do? We're going to package them all to get Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. So don't complain.
That's right. I think you have to, it has to be realistic. And do we think that Cousins is a lost cause? I mean, I think at this point, it's like.
Can you tell me he's not?
Well, I think you have to draft an if this is going to be the year, because you may not get this opportunity to be this high in the draft next year. You might, like, if you're rebuilding, you might be stuck in that top 10 a couple years, but this is the year you take your shot and try to get that quarterback, I think. And if you draft him, and here's the question to raise, Judd. Let's assume you get in the top five, right? Through trades or whatever, through being bad and moving up. Do you let Spielman and Zimmer pick it?
That's a really compelling question that I think has different answers. And I think if you are the Wilfs and you decide that this team needs to draft a quarterback and cultivate that young man, I don't think I want Mike to be his coach.
I just don't. If you're in position to get, I don't think you're not going to get number one. I think, you know, Jets and somebody, I just don't think you're going to be that bad, Judd.
How about if I make the right trades to get number one though? Here's what we need here. We need Trevor Lawrence to make it very clear that he will under no circumstances ever play a down for the Jets, which he should do for his own. Darnold, look, I can't tell you that I know Sam Darnold stinks. I can tell you that I know he's being ruined. He's actively being ruined. If I'm the Lawrence camp, I'm not going to allow my guy to get anywhere near that team. And I don't care who the coach is, because that organization stinks from the head on down. Starts with ownership there.
Well, that's a whole nother thing. But if you're in position to get Justin Fields.
Yeah.
And if you're the Wills, I think you think, you know what? I want an offensive coach to be this guy. I want a franchise quarterback and I want an offensive coach. And maybe at that point you say we clean house and start over with a franchise guy, quarterback, a new offensive coach. The Wills are going to face some interesting, because I haven't gone through the Vikings schedule, you know, clearly, but based off last week, I don't see them winning more than five games. Do you?
Not based off last week, no. And I think if they continue to subtract parts, which in this case is pretty smart, I think they can almost guarantee that they'll win about four or five games.
So that puts you in the top five probably, right?
Yeah.
Six, seven? Will that get Fields?
It will if I accumulate enough draft picks right now that I could package. So if I could swap first round picks, give you my first round pick in 2021, which I would prefer not to do, but I would to get a top quarterback and then include draft picks that I've acquired at the deadline. Mm-hmm. I think I can get into the top three. Let's say I'm drafting fifth or sixth. I'm not that far down. It's not like I'm picking 25. So I think that there are scenarios under which you could make a really good play to get Fields. The other thing that's going to help, guys, is if Houston continues to stink, that pick belongs to the Dolphins, who have Tua.
Yeah.
They'll be open for business.
They'll be open for business, yeah. And you know, the wild card is how teams view Lance from North Dakota State. How far is it? You know, obviously Lawrence and Fields are up here. Where is the gap there? You know, is he a top five guy? Is he the slam dunk number three quarterback taken? I would assume he probably is at this point, but that's for teams to decide. I can't sit here and tell you I've even seen him play just based on, you know, hype and what people say. But it'll be interesting to see if he catapults into that, hey, he's a top five pick. He's a sure thing. He's not that far behind Fields and those guys. How that affects it, too.
So it's Lawrence. Fields. It's Fields. It's Lance. The BYU kid I've seen a lot of talk about as well.
Yeah, I have watched him play. He's good. I mean, but I will say this. BYU is benefiting greatly from the reworked schedule. Go back and look at BYU's original schedule.
Which would have been fun.
At Utah, Michigan State, Gophers. They had four straight Power 5 schools that they opened up with. They haven't played a Power 5. Or maybe they play one, but it's you know, who they're playing now is a significant drop. But I think that kid is good. I think he is a good quarterback. I don't know if he's in that discussion of
right,
but he does look like the real deal.
So is he probably a top 10 pick then? So it probably
top 10. I guess it's, you know, then you have to factor in tackles and, you know, defensive linemen and all that. I don't know what every team is going to finish needs. You know, I mean, Cincinnati is going to finish in the top 10. They're not going to take a quarterback, obviously, you know, sure. Burrow. So, but is he going to be the fourth quarterback taken? That's probably the way to look at it. I mean, he's going to be a first round pick, I assume, but is he going to be the fourth or fifth guy taken? I don't know.
Burrow, that kid is impressive. That kid is fun to watch. He is going to be good for a long time.
See, that's the thing, Jed. If you're Cincinnati, they got one win, right? But
yeah.
You're not happy with it, but if you're a fan, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Quarterback, you know, now you just got to get pieces around him, and that, you know, who knows if that organization can do it, but at least you feel like they solved that big, you know, question mark.
Here's why I think, Chip, the Vikings actually have a path that makes sense here. To their delight, well, financially not so, but to their ears, to the delight of their ears, there are going to be no fans almost certainly at games all year, right? So fans are upset that they stink, but basically they're just, they go, you know, to Twitter and complain, and that's fine. But, you know, that Atlanta game would have been toxic. That building would have been toxic. So if you're the Vikings, you actually have a pretty good game plan here, potentially. If you are going to draft a quarterback and let's say blow out the coaching staff, which is going to be costly because Zim just got the 3-year extension that runs through, what, 2023. But if you're going to do that now, you could basically welcome fans back next year with, well, we had a disappointing year. We might not be that good this year, but we got our quarterback, which I think changes the dynamic of the feeling about the team completely if that quarterback proves he can play.
Well, and we've seen it, Judd. When you've been in a stadium, when it turns toxic, that affects people that make decisions. Whether it's the booing, whether it's just the vibe you get in there, whether fans stop showing up. When fans stop showing up, that's, you know, that affects decision makers. But I was thinking about this yesterday, Judd, having the day off and just watching TV, watching a lot of games. I mean, when you watch like Mahomes and Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray and all these quarterbacks, it's a different thing, man.
Yes.
It just is. I mean, if it's not as, you can just sit there and watch a day of football and just see how obvious what they need to do is. They find that guy. They absolutely have to find that guy.
Their biggest problem, starting with Rick, is the game changed. And I don't think he understood completely how much the game had changed. And it's funny, Chipper. When I was on the beat at the combine, I don't recall the year exactly, but it's when the college game had changed fundamentally a lot offensively, but the pro game hadn't yet. And I remember talking to Rick once and I'm like, how do you scout guys now? Cause like it doesn't translate right now. So if a left tackle looks great, that doesn't mean he's a great tackle. It means he's a great college left tackle. Mm-hmm. And he tried to explain to me, but the one thing that I never saw coming back then was this: the pro game was about to adopt the college game. So it's not like the college game that the pros said, oh, forget that, we can't do that. They said, oh, no, we've got all these athletes infiltrating our game who are fantastic. And it's almost like during the course of the Cousins tenure here, slowly but surely, and now it's really turned a corner, the pro game itself has become the college game. Mm-hmm. And Kirk can't play that game. I mean, he just doesn't.
Well, what, you know, and I realize this is, they're probably an outlier. So is, but watch the way Kansas City Chiefs offense plays. It is a different game than what we see with the speed and the movement and just the creativity and the way Mahomes, you know, orchestrates it all. But yeah, I mean, there's every position. Look at the way the linebacker position has changed. I mean, you have to have guys like Kendricks that can cover in space. Look at the way the tight end position has changed, where you have to have almost, they're hybrids now. They're half, you know, blockers, but more receivers, left tackles. I mean, it's every position's changed because of the, you know, it changed up, not downward. And so you have to have that quarterback that is creative and can move and make something out of nothing. It's just, you know, like I said, when you watched like that game last night, Russell Wilson and Murray, I mean, that was just fabulous the way those two just moved around and made things happen on the run and with their feet and their arm. And it just feels like, and then you watch the Vikings offense and it's still, it just feels, you know, like a throwback in a lot.
Yes. And Kirk doesn't, I mean, it's not Kirk's fault. He doesn't have the skill set the guys have now. He just doesn't. And you can't, you can't, you know, at the age of what, he's 32 now or something like that, 33. You can't just all of a sudden talk about, you know, this year I think I'm going to become more mobile. That doesn't work like that. That's not real. That's not the real world. I'll give you guys a quarterback that I think is the poster child for the starting point of what you have to have. And this guy might not be great. He's been up and down, but I think he's the starting point now, 2020, okay? Josh Allen of Buffalo. Because he's not, because, you know, he's had some great games. He's had some clunkers at times. I don't think he's great, but he's got the skill set of the starting point that I need, which is you can move, you're big, you're strong, you're mobile, you've got the arm. Like, that's just to me, if there is a tier of what tiers can I use, he's at the bottom of the tier that you have to have a quarterback who can compete right now, I think.
Yeah. And Judd, and this whole conversation goes back to the head coach and what philosophically do you want to look like? Zim still has an idea of it's ball control, it's pound the ball on the ground, it's time of possession, and don't make mistakes with the quarterback, don't turn the ball over. So it comes back to just kind of the fundamental, you know, philosophical vision of what you want your offense to look, and that starts with the head coach. And him and Spillman are obviously aligned in that. And so that's where, if you're the Wills, Judd, do you trust the ownership to look around the league and say, hey, the game has changed here? We need, or do you think they have so, not that they're detached, because I don't say they're detached owners, but do you think they have that kind of wherewithal to say, you know what, the game has changed, and I'm not sure the team we have in place in terms of Spillman and Zimmer fit that change?
I guess my first question to them off of that one would be this to the Wilfs. Do you trust yourself to know the game well enough to make that decision yourself? To their credit, and Chip, we, you know, saw this and continued to see it for a long time. To their credit, they've done a very good job of hiring people and allowing those people to do their jobs. Now, the Wilfs are huge fans, but, you know, as far as allowing the people that they hire to do their job, they seem to be good at that. But
And spend money.
But the question now is what you just said, which is, are they allowing the right people to do the job? And the more I watch football now, and, you know, in I did the same thing that you did on Sunday. I sat down and watched games all day. I don't think they probably have the right people football-wise running this team. It doesn't mean that they weren't very good at one time, but Andy Reid, think about how that guy adapted his philosophy.
Yeah.
I mean, completely. He's an old man, and he adapted just fantastically. And Mike and Rick seem to really be set in how they think that they can win. And you watch it from the quarterback on down, and I don't know that you see it.
No, and it's and you know, I don't know if it's as simple as Andy Reid's an offensive guy and Zimmer's a defensive guy. And not saying you can't be a defensive guy and win, because that's we're seeing it. I mean, look at Pittsburgh right now, you know, look how good they are. I just think it still comes back to, you've got to find a quarterback, man.
I agree.
You've got to find a quarterback, and that's going to be special and can, you know, do things that overcome deficiencies that you have and not being good at certain spots. I mean, heck, and I Russell Wilson, I think, is the MVP, but I don't know if he's going to be able to get to the Super Bowl with that defense. But he's, you know, he's overcoming a defense that's terrible, you know, right now.
I know.
And, you know, I just don't know that, you know, with Cousins, it has to be almost – I don't think it has to be perfect, but it has to be ideal for him to succeed.
Yeah, and I think if you throw a really good team at him defensively, I think he's probably in trouble now too. Mm-hmm. I think just a starting point. I think the guys like Cousins, and there used to be a lot of guys, and in that era, Kirk Cousins would have been a very effective QB. I think the starting point is this. Guys like that who succeeded back in 2000, let's say five or so, the one thing that they never really had to deal with consistently for sure was interior pressure from the D line. It didn't happen. Yeah. And so they could drop back. And yes, they had to be aware of what the outside rush was doing against the tackles. But if you look at a guy now, Grady Jarrett, I mean, guys like that, who's just outstanding, guys like that, for the most part in 2003, didn't exist across the board. They were bigger guys who would stop the run. So I just think that what you're asking Kirk to do against defenses now looks to be too much. And I don't know that I don't think there's enough workarounds to fix those things. I just don't.
Well, and I also wonder about his confidence too. I mean, his comments after the, you know, the Atlanta game were just, where if I keep throwing interceptions, I'm going to get benched. I won't finish the season, you know, move on. Yeah. It's like, where is his confidence at this point? And and probably rightfully so. I mean, some of the throws he, you know, that first interception, you're thinking, holy cow, you know. So, but defenses have changed too. I mean, what everybody's looking for. I mean, the those rush, you know, whether it's outside, inside, linebackers, whatever. I mean, defensive have, you know, had to adjust because of the way the offenses have. So, you know, yeah, it's I was thinking about this yesterday, Judd. Packers week, man. This normally is like an exciting week.
Yeah. But I got nothing for you. It's like, Chip, it's only one thing, election week. It's now, it's election week.
That's right.
I got nothing for you. This is going to be the first time, probably since I started to follow the Vikings in 78, Chipper, that we're going to go two Packers weeks in this town flatlined. Nothing.
Yeah.
Because the first one was nothing, and this one's going to be equally as, oh, they're playing the Packers. That's right, on Sunday. Wonder what it's going to be like.
Remember we covered it, and it was Favre going back? And, I mean, remember?
Strib used to send an early person there to go advance it. You'd go there for the week and cover the Packers practices to get the feel for what was going on in Green Bay.
Judd, it hit me yesterday. It's like, man, this is Packers week.
I mean, it's a column.
It's column. Like,
you're right.
Yeah, it's like, where is the, it's just like, okay, it's just another week. I mean, gosh.
Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's chance to go 1-6 week. It's not just another week. I'm going to tell you right now, guilty pleasure, Saturday, flipping around to watch quarterbacks was actually fun. Fields is phenomenal. I mean, he's fun.
Really good.
But this is the first time in a long time, if ever, that I'm actually watching college football games to watch quarterbacks who could be Vikings. And then on Sunday, I watch games to see who absolutely stunk as well. And who?
Yeah.
And I was rooting for the Jets. I'm like, you got a chance against Buffalo.
Judd, so this is going to be the reverse heartbreaker, right? They're going to put themselves in position to get Fields, and then they're going to win a couple games later. It knocks them out of position.
Oh, no, don't, no. That's the 2011 problem. You remember
that?
That's
right. Yeah, Leslie
against Washington. It's going to be a Merry Christmas. No, it's not. And Carolina, they beat Carolina on that. I think when Graham Gano missed a late kick, that would have. That team should have been 1-15. And you know what?
They say Merry Christmas. I'm like, no.
First of all, your star running back's knee just got shredded six ways to Sunday. And second of all, you won a stupid game that you shouldn't have won.
I know.
And I know that his career got cut short, but rewind time, I will still take my chances at 1-15 on Andrew Luck happily.
100% of the time.
Happily take my chance.
100% of the time. Yeah.
I don't think he gets hurt here.
You can see that coming a mile away, what's going to happen, right? They're going to win enough games and knock him out.
Oh, stop with it. Last thing. Lots of surprises, but I think this is my biggest one in the National Football League this season. How on earth are the Dallas Cowboys this bad?
Yeah, well.
I thought they'd be good.
Yeah, like, I mean.
Well, like, I thought the Bears would be bad, but, you know, okay, they're good. That's fine. But this Dallas team, McCarthy? Might not survive the season at this rate.
Well, that's what you wonder. Now he has obviously some built-in excuses now. I mean, when you look back, I mean, that. But I don't know that they're a good team with Dak, you know. And so, you know, maybe it's the coach. Maybe it's, you know, the owner trying to be the GM with personnel. And I haven't studied them extensively, but I thought they would be one of the better teams. I did going in.
So did I.
And that's just, you know. But we see that with the NFL. Year, a team that you think is going to – that looked strong 1 year, and you think, okay, this team's going to be really good next year. And for whatever reason, whether it's injuries or just guys get old and the production dips or whatever. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how committed he is to McCarthy. This thing just – you know, if they wind up with two or three wins or four wins, I don't know what they have two now, whatever they have.
I'd have to look at what their record is. But
they're terrible, yeah. Yeah, they're awful. They're awful. So it'd be interesting if he stands by him.
Yeah. Well, when McCarthy went after the players in his press conference for not going after the guy who hit Dalton. That, I mean, that's a whole nother thing. And that's,
yeah, that's,
that's ordinarily your last days right there.
How to lose a locker room.
You know, there's a head coach up here. I saw PFF had a story about, you know, in-season trade. I know it's rare, and I don't even know if it's possible, but I got a head coach up here who knows how to fix your defense. That's right. That's right. Call the Vikings right now. 952-828-6500. I got a coach for you. Let the bidding begin. We'll still give him to you for a fifth-round pick. You can have him for a fifth-round pick. Koobs' kid can coach the team.
That's right. Still make the deal, huh? The coaching trade, right?
I'm telling you, if Jerry calls, Jerry's crazy enough to call.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could trade a coach during a season. That might be against league rules. But if they want Zim in January,
would that be crazy? Would that be crazy even for Jerry Jones to fire a coach after 1 year and make a trade for another coach? That would be crazy even for Jerry Jones, right?
It would be, but he'd be the guy to do it, right?
He'd be the one. Yeah, he would be the owner to do it. He would be the one guy you'd say, if you say, this owner just did this, who would you guess it was? Everybody say, yeah, it's Jerry Jones.
I think some of what Mike does is archaic, but I will say this. I do think if Mike went to a team that needed immediate defensive improvement, and I think his act works early. So I think if he went in with the Zim sort of gruffness, that could actually work there. I'm not saying that they'd be great, but I do think that it could work there. And I do think that there's a case to be made that Mike's message here, and it's not Mike's fault. He's 6+ years in. It just, things run their course.
Yeah. And John, I think he's a good coach. I think he's a good coach. And I don't even know if his message is, I just think it's been a confluence of the quarterback has failed him. You know, they turned over the roster and probably thought too highly or thought that it would work with young guys replacing veterans right away. Let's be honest. I mean, this is not excuses, but when you lose Pierce, Barr, Hunter off your defense, it's not going to be as good.
You're starting to sound like Sid now.
Like shit, I know.
Not the ghost of Sid has gotten into you. You can't lose all your specialists. You can't lose what you geniuses think. They'd lose other specialists. They're right. Lucky they didn't lose 100-0.
But I do think
I missed it on Saturday.
I know it. I do miss it. Just slamming the table. But where him and Spillman are vulnerable is they invested in the wrong quarterback.
Absolutely. My favorite Sid at Gophers games, because he cared so damn much, right?
Oh God.
On Saturday night he would have just been beside himself. He would have been so upset. But I used to say to him, because he'd slam the press box and be like, these guys can't do it. This Morgan stinks. What? I mean, what? He's a top rated. And I would always look at Sid and say, Sid, that's a great column. Write that column.
That's right.
I can't write that.
The thing that used to drive him crazy the most at Gopher games was the kicking, the punting and kicking. Could you imagine me trying to explain to him what the hell happened with all the kicking?
Oh, no.
It would have been. So you see, Sid, the third guy had Corey, and this guy had Hurdy, and the punter, it would have been a nightmare trying to explain.
Oh, my God, that would have been fantastic to see. You would have had, like, a napkin out trying to diagram who was playing and who wasn't playing, and why right. Some poor kid who was like, walking across campus on Thursday is now trying to punt.
Hey, speaking of which, if that punter is out, I'm half – facetious here. I wonder, he should try like open tryouts on camp, because if he's so worried about his punter kicking a 14-yard punt that he's going for 4th-and-4, you know, a fake, maybe he should have open tryouts this week on campus, you know?
Can soccer players punt?
They can kick, you know, maybe.
I'm just thinking out loud. That would be fun. That would be a very Fleckonian thing to do. That would be fun to watch.
But my guess is one of those two kickers that were out, if they come back, I'm guessing they're the true backup punter. Surely guy that punted the other night was not their backup punter. Because you have to factor in, okay, under normal circumstances, what if our punter pulls a hamstring? Who's our backup guy? I can't imagine that was the number two option.
Can you guys imagine the fear that if you, like, hadn't punted and, like, are told you have to punt? Now, I understand that if you punt and you're good, it's probably not that hard. But can you imagine the fear of, like, you were pulled aside? Like, you were pulled aside and said, hey, Chip, you got to punt tonight. And it's Michigan. Oh my God! I think I dropped the ball.
Yeah, it would not.
I might start crying and just drop the ball. I mean, seriously,
that ball would slice off my foot for like a 2-yarder, probably.
I mean, yeah, Hey, PJ, you know what? I like it. Snap it to the upback. See what happens, because I ain't got it in me.
Well, that's always
– oh, man.
The other thing I always do, like, at a Twins game, when there's a high pop-up, you're sitting in a press box, they're like, how much would they have to pay you to try to catch that thing? I mean, could you imagine trying to catch one of those big league pop-ups?
No. Like, I'd have right no before. Chance.
That's right.
I'd be circling below. I'd be circling below it, and I would get dizzy and fall down, and then the ball would hit me.
That's right. Just looking up right there made me dizzy. Yeah.
By the way, that gopher debacle did stop us from watching one of the most exciting worlds. Did you guys see the end of that game?
I just filed my column, and all of a sudden my Twitter feed just went.
Oh my God!
What just happened? So I raced home, and that was an ending. For a high-level game, what was more shocking, that or the Minneapolis Miracle?
Declan, what do you think?
Between the Minneapolis Miracle and which one?
The baseball Series. Game, the World Series.
I would say the Minneapolis Miracle. The Minneapolis Miracle. No one saw that coming. I mean, the Rays can't win the World Series. Like, there's a possibility the Rays won't win the World Series out of that. That game with the Vikings at least vaunted you to the NFC Championship game. Like, that won you the game. But in terms of just pure craziness, I mean, I've never seen anything like that. It was insane.
It's that play. Yeah, right.
Think about that. The base runner falls down. There's two errors on a play. The guy's trying to sweep tag. It flies off his glove.
So to your point, though, I think if you talk about improbability of play, it's a baseball game, right? Because the miracle, the miracle took a couple of accidents by the Saints, including their D-back deciding to fly by Stephon Diggs. But like that was at the very most, that was probably two breakdowns, right? The baseball game took the ball hit Chris Taylor.
By a guy who shouldn't have been on. Yeah.
Chris Taylor, who was playing because Bellinger was out with a sore back. He misplays the ball. He picks it up. Arozarena, to your point, Chip, who is the winning run in that case, falls down. Muncy cuts it. And then he throws it to the catcher, Will Smith, who somehow goes to make the sweep tag before he gets the ball. I think it's the baseball play, because that was so many things. And I mean, my God, Arozarena's on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
The ball, Will Smith catches that ball. He can literally walk to Arozarena probably and tag him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, both are ones that you've never seen before, obviously. But I probably would go baseball. As crazy and as we've never seen something like that, an NFL playoff game in like that before. Yep. But yeah.
Awesome. As I've always said, those are the plays why we watch. Why us morons who spend all of our times and our wives say, are you going to watch that game too? I've always said, you got to watch the crap for the payoff. It's the payoff. And that right. on Saturday night was the payoff. And I was stuck watching the poor kid couldn't punt, and the Gophers give up 49 points. And I thought to myself, I should have just stayed home and watched the darn baseball game, because we'll never, you're not going to see an ending like that probably for the rest of our lifetimes, at least for Chip and me. Declan might. But yeah, that was, oh my gosh. That play was so wild. Okay, that play that I had just gotten in my car and was going home when that play happened. Dan Shulman on ESPN, who's one of the best, right?
I mean,
the guy's incredible. Dan Shulman had trouble describing it, because how do you describe it? There's the ball, it's bobbled. Now a Rosarena, he falls down, he gets up, he starts. And it's like, I had no clue, but I wasn't mad at Dan. Dan did his best.
No, that's,
how do you describe it?
You're just like, and some stuff happened, but
exactly. And it's incredible.
You've just seen it. You should have seen it. It was crazy.
Because I don't know what I just saw. All right.
I know.
Thanks, Chip Scoggins.
All right, boys.
Great stuff. Mackie, back tomorrow. Mackie and Judd, thanks for tuning in on this Monday.